Emotional intelligence has been shown to help people think more clearly, communicate more effectively, and bring unity to teamwork. It helps individuals control impulses, and deeper than that, to control their emotions. People with a high emotional intelligence quotient, or EQ, are able to adapt to change and to those around them. They're steady and dependable, and they're open to constructive criticism, innovation, and new ideas. They sound like the kind of person you would want for a spouse, a colleague, or a friend, don't they? So would you like to be that way too? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. In order to control our emotions, we need to first recognize our emotions, analyze our thoughts, reconstruct any incorrect thinking or cognitive distortions, and then keep practicing over and over again. That's called cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. From Anxiety BC, here are some real-life stories about the use of CBT to treat anxiety.
My biggest challenges with anxiety were in relationship. I did not have any romantic relationships until my mid-20s. I didn't date anyone until my mid-20s.
How I experienced anxiety was in forming close relationships with people. When I would be chatting with friends, it would be very difficult for me to be open and share much about myself. I also found it difficult in the workplace to sort of talk to authority people or my co-workers if there was ever a presentation or anything like that.
It just hit all of a sudden, out of the blue, nothing. I was perfectly happy. I wasn't ultimately very stressed or anything like that.
I had recognized that I was anxious as a child, but it took until my early adulthood in my 20s where my anxiety had gotten to a point where I was starting to withdraw from friends. It was difficult to go to work, and there was a whole bunch of other issues going on.
There came a point with my anxiety where, as I said, it was keeping me up at night. It was affecting my eating and really taking a toll on my health. So at that point I realized it wasn't just a mental struggle, it was a physical struggle as well.
I already knew about it, and then I did some research into some of the symptoms I was experiencing online. I did some research, and then I found that there was a name for it.
I was lucky enough to look up some local resources, and part of that was the word CBT, which up to that point, I had no idea what it was. So I did look into it further and did go see my doctor and spoke to him about this program, which was cognitive behavioral therapy based.
The treatment that I received was in a group format, and I found that that was really funny and ironic to get treatment in that way, because that was the kind of very situation that made me really anxious. But it was good for the fact that I was forced to sort of confront it in that environment, which was a safe environment.
The instructors for the course were people who had previously suffered from anxiety problems and had taken CBT programs themselves and managed to overcome and deal with their own problems. So they knew exactly where we were all coming from.
The CBT program that I got into was a one-on-one, which was actually quite good for me.
There are so many tools that are related to CBT, and between both the group session and my private therapist, I had a whole toolbox of things to use.
And having all those tools makes success more likely. On today's show, our brain and thinking expert is back, Phil's getting really close to finishing that fabulous dessert, and Sean's in the gym, but first, the news. In the headlines today, is cancer therapy going to the dogs? What's better than balance for the senior brain and head injury and CBT? Therapy dogs may make a difference for children with cancer and their parents, according to an animal-assisted intervention study. Children recently diagnosed with cancer were randomly selected to receive either standard care or standard care plus regular visits from a therapy dog in the clinical hospital. Preliminary findings show that kids receiving weekly dog visits have more stable blood pressure and heart rate. Their parents have more stable levels of anxiety and even a slight decrease in anxiety by the end of the four-month intervention compared to parents of children without dog visits, whose anxiety levels can fluctuate wildly. Salivary stress hormone levels in the dogs have been measured to see how they are affected by the visits, and final results are expected soon. Resistance training seems to reduce the progression of white matter lesions in the brains of seniors. White matter lesions are prevalent in older adults and are associated with poorer mobility and cognitive function. Vancouver researchers randomized a group of women aged 65 to 75 years who had white matter lesions on MRI to either resistance training once a week, twice a week, or instead to a twice-weekly balance and tone exercise. After 1 year, MRI showed lower white matter lesion volume in the twice-weekly resistance training group compared to the other groups. This was correlated with the maintenance of walking speed. So seniors, how would you feel about doing a few push-ups, sit-ups, lunges, and bicep curls a couple of times a week? Cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, may be helpful for people recovering from traumatic brain injury. The after effects of head injury often includes insomnia, fatigue, impaired cognition, depression, anxiety, and pain. A recent New York study found that CBT aimed at helping insomnia also improved symptoms of anxiety, depression, fatigue, and pain to a varied extent in different participants in their study. So if you have a mood disturbance following a head injury, consider CBT as part of your rehab process. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Our guest today is Dr. Neil Nedley, internal medicine physician, internationally recognized speaker, and author of the book Lost Art of Thinking, which contains everything that we're covering in this series and so, so much more. I asked him to explain another cognitive distortion that's covered in this book. It's called emotional reasoning.
Emotional reasoning is stating that because you feel that way, it's true. Whatever is causing you to feel that way is true. So if I feel overwhelmed and helpless, that means my problems are impossible to solve. Wow. If I feel on top of the world, that means I am invincible. And so emotional reasoning, of course, is a distortion, but it is a very common distortion in today's world. So we have a tendency to just conclude that the way we are feeling at that point is, of course, based on true and accurate evidence.
I wonder if that's becoming more common now that we live in a here and now
society. It is becoming much more common, yeah. And so people will look for quick fixes to improve the way they're feeling. And so this is where you tend to start going for things that are even addictive. You know, at first they tend to cause this euphoria, and then the more you do it, the less euphoria, and then pretty soon in between times, when you're not doing it, your brain chemistry is down in the basement, and then you're just doing it just to get numb. And of course, that's a bad place to be.
Right, so what used to take you up has brought you, is now just getting you back to normal. Because
yes.
You're...
Yeah.
Wow.
And it all started out with emotional reasoning, the quick fix ways to try to help you feel better.
So if you feel down, mm-hmm. How do you reason your way out of that and get over that emotional feeling?
Well, first of all, that's an important step to recognize that you can do that.
Okay.
Because many people don't realize that what is actually causing them to feel the way they feel is their thoughts. And so it's easier for them to pop a Xanax or to, you know, take a glass of alcohol or whatever or to view pornography or something like that, than it is for them to analyze their thoughts and correct their thoughts. But they would have been far better using the analyzation and the correcting than going into the false ways of altering the way you feel.
I'm thinking this, a lot of people say, I'm too tired to exercise. That is kind of an emotional reasoning pattern, isn't it? And
that's
so they
right.
don't exercise yet. If they were to say, exercise will give me energy, I'm going to push through this.
So that's right.
It also has that sort of sense of determination that goes with it too.
Exactly.
After the break, we're heading into the kitchen to continue building our scrumptious cheesecake. But first, this.
Beautiful sunshine today, isn't it?
Oh, it's lovely. Oh, yeah. So nice.
I've really enjoyed our walk thus far. You know, other than being in the great outdoors, what are the benefits of daily activity?
Well, let's play exercise ABCs.
What's that?
Well, like exercise makes you agile and athletic.
Oh, so like B would be blood pressure, it normalizes it.
Yep, and C would be cardiovascular health.
D is diabetes, it helps lower your blood sugars.
True. E is for endorphins, that mood enhancer that naturally comes with exercise.
F is for flow, that is blood flow. Perfect health requires perfect circulation.
G is for get up and go. When you've got up and gone, you've got plenty of get up and go.
H is for healthy heart.
I is for indigestion. If you walk gently after meals, you digest your food better.
Did you know J is for junk food? That's right, it kills the desire for it.
Oh, speaking of killing, K is for killer cells. Your natural killer cells are boosted by exercise. That means you can fight viruses and cancer.
L is for LDL cholesterol. It lowers it.
M is for muscles. All our muscles get stronger, including our heart muscle.
Well, I like that one. N is for anywhere. You can exercise indoors or outdoors, so there's no excuse.
O is for optimal health. You can't have it without exercise.
Well, P is for pain.
Pain?
That's right. As a massage therapist, I know that exercise reduces or eliminates back pain completely.
Q is for queues at the doctor's office. If you exercise, you're much less likely to be in one.
I like that one. Now, R is for rest. If you get daily exercise, you'll rest much better at nighttime.
And S is for strength, and we need strength whatever our age.
That's right. T is for tension and stress. We'll get less of that or reduce it.
U is for under the weather. You won't be under the weather once you've been out and got some movement going.
V is for volume. We'll get much more blood volume at each heartbeat.
And W is for weight. You cannot remove your weight unless you've been exercising.
I like X. It means extra years added to our lives.
Ah, which brings us to Y, because that's for youth. And exercise is actually the fountain of youth.
And that brings us to the very last one, Z for zeal. It gives us a zeal and zest for life and health.
Well, I think exercise should be on every doctor's orders.
Well, come on, Doc, let's go.
Okay. Welcome back. Stage 3 of the cheesecake. And Phil, what are we up to?
Well, today we're working with our topping. And I know there are a lot of cheesecake purists that do not want topping on their cheesecake. But this is a topping that is much healthier than the ones you'll find out there. And to me, it adds another flavor, so I love it.
That's right. It adds a little sweetness. But it's got fruit in it, which is going to add some nutrition as well.
Absolutely.
So what goes in it?
So this is going to be 10 ounces of crushed, unsweetened pineapple. 6 tablespoons of juice from the canned pineapple, 1 tablespoon of sweetener, which can be honey or light agave, and 2 tablespoons of cornstarch, which you mix into a paste with 2 tablespoons of water, and then finally, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract.
All right, so.
So we've got our pan, we're heating it up, and the idea is we're just gonna heat it all up and get it to a simmer and have it cook.
All right.
It's very simple.
So I guess if you're only cooking cornstarch, then you only need to simmer it for 1 minute. Once it gets to the simmer.
Absolutely. So while you're combining it and making our paste, I'm just going to put our our ingredients in here.
And you know, if you wanted to change up the flavor of this cheesecake, you could do berry cheesecake, you could do, I don't know, peach, mango, you could do all kinds of things. You just would change, you know, I guess we could say one can of fruit, and then you can flavor it however you
want. And that would do it. But the important thing to me is that you don't want to get a can of filling or you know, topping that you usually find in the store, because that's just loaded with sugar. You don't get sort of the whole fruit or anything like that. So this is creating a topping that's going to be really good and delicious. And whatever you want to make it, you're making it healthier.
Right. Now, I don't know how you do it, but when I'm using cornstarch, I will bring everything else to the boil first and then throw in my cornstarch so I don't have to stand there for what feels like forever. I'm such an impatient person. Until it begins to boil. And, you know, and then it goes lumpy because I'm never standing there perfectly watching it. So I cheat, I must say.
See, I like more of a hands-on.
Okay.
So I have no problem constantly stirring it and making sure that nothing burns or clumps or anything like that.
And playing with your food.
And playing with my food.
So let me take that out for you then.
So against your recommendations, we're just going to combine it, pour it all together. The goal is to get this to a simmer. And then once it's simmering, you just want to simmer it for about a minute. Then you can pull it off the heat. You want to cool it so that it, and you want to cool it before you put it onto the cheesecake. Definitely don't put it on hot. So you got that. And then once it's cool, you top it onto the cheesecake and then put them both in the refrigerator to cool.
All right.
So it's a very simple recipe.
And so here we are, we're looking at it. We've got one more stage before we can eat it. But here we are with the topping on, and that looks beautiful. And I see you've thrown some lemon zest on there to just...
Well, you want to plate it, make it look even better. But absolutely. So you can see the three stages we've done already, our crust, our filling, now our topping. And only one more just to finish it and top it off.
Super. Now back to real life stories about using CBT for anxiety from Anxiety BC.
During treatment, I learned a whole variety of strategies from the beginning part with just the education portion, finding out that panic and the symptoms and the thoughts and how my body was reacting was completely normal. And that had a really positive effect on my frame of mind, that this wasn't something that I was facing alone.
We also learned how to do relaxed breathing and relaxation techniques, and I use those still every day. Breathing through your abdomen instead of through your chest helped me a lot. I do it all the time now. I only breathe through my stomach.
We went into different relaxation techniques, full muscle relaxations. There's muscle relaxation techniques that I could do at home. I learned some quick techniques so that I could actually do this without anybody wondering what I was up to.
One of the great techniques of CBT is positive thinking and reframing. So while I may never be able to banish all of the worries and cyclical thoughts that I have become much better at viewing things in a positive way.
And then we got into sort of challenging some of the thoughts about the whether these were realistic, and jotting some of these thoughts down, which were also important, because I had gotten to the point where the belief that these negative outcomes were going to happen were guaranteed. I was always reacting as though the negative outcome was guaranteed. And just by challenging these and thinking in a different way, that was also a wonderful tool, getting me sort of realizing that I had an option in my thought, thus breaking this whole anxiety cycle. The next phase of the treatment was exposure therapy, where I would actually list a number of different goals, different anxiety-provoking situations where we could look at it with the therapist and make some decisions on strategically breaking it up so that it would be in manageable stages, where we would bring on some anxiety, but I would stay in the situation long enough for the anxiety to peak and then to subside again.
The theory behind this is that the more times you practice it, the less frightening it becomes. So it's terrifying at the beginning, but over time, it's okay.
All of the therapies, you know, uniquely do their piece, and they're all wonderful tools to stay with you as a for life, basically.
After you leave the support network of group therapy sessions or one-on-one sessions with the therapist, of course it is hard to keep up the good practice of using CBT. Old habits die hard. It's very easy to fall back into worry and sleepless nights. So it is a lifestyle change, and I'm prone to anxiety. I don't think that my personality is going to change. I think that's who I am. But I can definitely change my lifestyle and my behaviors and my thinking patterns, and it's something I work on daily.
Putting the effort in for a huge payback. And here's today's expert guest, Dr. Neil Nedley, with how he helps his patients gain control over their feelings.
There's two primary principles that we teach. One is feelings are much like waves. We can't stop them from coming, but we can choose which one to surf. And so when we get these feelings, we need to put them, elevate them to our frontal lobe, so we analyze them and see which one is based on non-polarized truth and accuracy. And so that's an important element. And the second one is simply this: don't bite at the bait of pleasure until you are sure there is no hook beneath.
Wow, which requires analysis.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly.
So it says stop and think.
That's
what the consequence would be. Now, another distortion is magnification and minimization.
Yes.
Let's start with magnification. Explain what
Well, that's when we're majoring in minors. You know, we are, the I can't stand it-itis, for instance, is a majoring in a minor.
Oh, so it's a small nuisance, but we're saying it's terrible and awful and we can't stand it.
Exactly.
And yes. The minimization?
Minimization is when we actually minimize something that is of greater importance. And often that tends to occur when we've actually done something wrong and we don't want to own up to it.
Okay.
So. And so we can say, you know, no big deal, everybody else does it, or that sort of thing. And so we're going to end up having some problems as a result of not correcting our mistake and owning up to what we've actually done.
Mm. Now, I'm thinking magnification can create quite an emotional trigger. Does anger come into this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it sure does. So whenever we see anger, rage out of control, those sorts of things, we're magnifying something and into something beyond what it actually is.
So we can even recognize it by our reaction and start to work backwards.
Exactly. Yeah.
So... our words are the self-talk that we're saying, and we're using these words, that's terrible, I can't stand it. Words are that powerful.
They are.
So how can we reword things, or how you might do that?
Well, words that can enrage is horrible, terrible, awful. We call it the HTAs. and words that are a little more calming can be, you know, nuisance, hassle, when things go bad, I would prefer this not to have happened. And so where we recognize its preferences, and that makes us feel much more towards calm. May not be quite calm, but it's closer to calm, and that can help us to actually think more rationally about what just happened that we didn't prefer to have happened. And so when we start talking about in the horrible, terrible, awful range, we know that people are magnifying. And so that's when And occasionally there are some things that are horrible and terrible and awful, you know. Yeah. When a jumbo jet goes down and you lose your wife and four kids, that qualifies. Mm-hmm. It's horrible and mm-hmm. terrible and awful.
Right.
And, you know, we've had someone come through our program that had that happen. I mean, he lost his wife and actually it was three children, not four children, but he lost all of his children and he lost his wife's parents on one of these big jumbo jet airplanes. So qualifies.
Right. And so if we remember that person and put what we've just experienced, we might actually be able to take a reference point and say, well, what we just experienced wasn't like
yes.
that.
But even in that situation where he was in, one of the things that we taught him, and of course the emotions are out of control at that point, and for good reason, and that's part of the grieving and in the mourning process. But one of the things that helps us to get over significant trauma or loss is to recognize that this wife is not coming back and the kids are not coming back. And it's going to be that way whether I'm miserable about it or not. So then it's better to just give up the misery. If we recognize that whenever we have a practical problem, we tend to have an emotional problem as well, and it's actually better to have the least amount of problems. So when we have a practical problem that inhibits us from achieving our goals, recognize I'm going to have this problem whether I'm miserable about it or not. So I might as well give up the misery. That makes us feel much more towards calm, and it puts us in a situation to be able to do something more useful about it and more practical. And, once he learned that in regards to that situation, he's living very healthfully now. Of course, he is remarried and has a new life. But had he just continued to dwell on the emotions of that event and how did the plane go down, you know, this was the Lockerbie, bombing instance.
And lots of unanswered questions.
Yeah, a lot of unanswered questions, yeah. Who was responsible for this, how did it happen and all of that. And that's when you can even get into PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder and all of that. Fortunately, he's doing quite well, obviously still disappointed about that part of his life. The part of the life of his entire family basically ended in an instant. Mm. But it's not something that's inhibiting his future success now.
Which it could easily have done without the intervention. Don't go away, Dr. Nedley's back after the break, but first, consider this. The strongest man who ever lived was thought to be Samson, yet he was also very weak. His parents were barren, and so in their older age, God blessed them with a son. Not just any son, but one born to deliver Israel from their oppressors, the Philistines. As an only child of older parents, perhaps young Samson was a little spoiled because we see that he had the problem of emotional reasoning. If he wanted something, whether it was good or not, he got it. As a young man, he saw a pretty Philistine girl and told his parents to get her for his wife. They pleaded with him to marry a pretty Israelite girl instead, but he simply demanded, "Get her for me, she pleases me." During the wedding feast, his wife betrayed him and he lost a bet of 30 men's suits. Emotions took over and he killed 30 Philistine men, took their suits to pay his bet off and left his bride at her father's house. After a while, emotions settled and he went to pick her up, but her father had married her off to one of his friends. Whew, Samson's emotional reasoning took over. And it became part of his motivation to harass Israel's oppressors during the next 20 years while he was a leader and judge in Israel. And though Samson ruled Israel, he didn't rule his own emotions. When he fell in love with Delilah, the Philistine, she found the secret of his strength and betrayed him to her people. They captured him, gouged out his eyes, and turned him into a beast of burden. He must have done a lot of thinking about the meaning and purpose of his life at that point. When the Philistines had a big religious feast, they brought him out of the prison to mock him, and there he prayed to God, asking for supernatural strength. God restored that strength, and he broke the central pillars of the temple, destroying the god Dagon, the Dagon temple, and 3,000 Philistines. I think he died a hero, but the story could have been so different. Thank you.
We're back, and it's our moving moment. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm ready to move.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, I'm ready to make a move.
All
right.
Uh-oh.
Let's go. We're going to jump right into it. Let's assume that everyone has watched us before and they know how to warm up.
Okay.
What I want you to do is take your weight, and sometimes having the weight in your hand, right? Of course, you know, adds resistance, right? But what we're going to do is an alternating lunge. All right. We're going to start with an alternating lunge. All the way here. Take a nice deep breath. All right. I want you to keep on continuing, right? Now, the beauty of the lunge is that it's working the quad. The heart rate is going up. It allows you to engage the core because you want to point your chest forward. The last thing you want to do is do this with your lunge. All right? You want to keep that core tight. Do two more. One on each side. Yep. And perfect. Drop the weight for a second. So I love to use lower body exercises and then jump to upper body exercises and do a core exercise. All right? So have a seat right here.
All right.
Keep the body nice and firm. You know, if you've never sat on a stability ball before, just sitting on the stability ball is a challenge, right?
Yep.
So what we're going to do is take this right here, point the palms forward, right there, right by your shoulder, and we're going to do presses. Aim for about 10 of them, all right? Go all the way up. Press. Perfect. Now remember, you got to keep the body nice and tight.
We sure do. Otherwise, we will end up on the floor.
Or you're going to end up right on the floor. Right. We're going to aim for 10 of those. Give me two more. Set your timer for 10 if you want to do 10, or you can set your timer for about 30 seconds. All right, 3, 2, and 1. All right, come off, keep the weight in your hand. And we're going to go into rows, okay? Come right over here. Bend over just a little bit, just like that. Extend the arm all the way out and pull the weight all the way up. Again, you can aim for about 10 to 15 reps, or you can set your timer for about 30 to 45 seconds. Either way, it's a good challenge. Choose a weight that's gonna challenge you. Extend all the way out. Give me two more. 1 and 2. Stand up nice and tall. Now, last one. Weight is right here. And I want you to come all the way up just like that. Work your delt. Back here, nice and slow. When you get to this position here, you're squeezing that delt. All right, don't lose the opportunity there. Right here, all the way back up, and back down. All right, again, 10 to 15 reps, or 30 to 45 seconds. 3, 2, and 1. And I'm gonna show you how this works. You take that weight and go back to your lunges. Go back to the lunges, come on.
Ooh.
You're my client today, come on, yes. Yes, 1, come on, 2, 3. Give me two more.
We had enough moving yet.
4. Come on. And 5. Nice work. Have a seat.
Ooh.
All right. Have a seat. This is how you burn calories. You can minimize the rest in between. Point the palms forward. Aim for 10 to 15 reps. Go. Yes. Come on. 2. Give me 3 more. 1. Come on. 2. Here you go. 3. All right. Pop up. There you go. Pop up. Go right to your rows. We're going to burn those calories today. We said we're going to move, right? Bend them. Yep. Boom. There you go. 2. Give me 3 more. 1. Come on. You got it. 2 and 3. Stand up nice and tall. Burn those calories. Yes. It burns. It's a great feeling, isn't it?
It burns.
You said we're going to move today, right? This is all about moving, right? 30 minutes?
I thought we were going to move.
No, I am. Look at the heavy weight. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're an excellent partner.
Oh.
Is it my turn? No.
Yeah.
So again, the beauty of burning calories, right?
Yeah.
Is you can either work out longer, which is not, you don't always have the time.
No, I don't always have the time.
Right?
No.
Or you can minimize the time, and the rest keeps your heart rate up a little bit, and you're just burning those calories post-workout.
Right.
Which is awesome, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right, let's stretch it out. We use those quads, right? So let's work on some balance. Take one leg. Oh, this is tough. It is tougher than it looks, right? You want to stretch the quads. You've done those lunges with the weight. 3, 2, 1, bring it down. Then switch. Get a good stretch. Point the chest forward. Take a deep breath. All right, relax, all right? Want another great exercise, take your right knee, put it right here, and push back. You're working a little bit of the balance. I know, it's not easy. It is not easy. And switch. You gotta stretch after you work out, or you wake up the next morning, and you're gonna say, go healthy for good, did that for me. Did that.
And it will remind you.
It will
watch
remind you.
The show.
It will, it will. All right, relax. Open and close. Alternate your right hand on the top and your left hand on the top. Take a nice deep breath. Shake it out. And you are good.
Well, thanks.
You're sure, very welcome. Good. You're very welcome.
Nuts, like almonds and peanuts, are full of healthy antioxidants. But not every almond or peanut on the supermarket shelf has the same antioxidant punch. Most of the nut's antioxidants are found in their outer soft covering. When this is damaged through peeling or blanching, half or more of the antioxidants are lost. Choose raw almonds over blanched and enjoy your peanuts with the brown papery covering intact. Choosing nuts in their natural state is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions that you've sent by Facebook, text, email and phone. Teresa asks, I was recently diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and the doctor prescribed metformin. I read about the medication and I'm not really comfortable taking it. Do you have any suggestions? She's going to see me back in 3 months. Well, Teresa, you've got a lovely 3 month time span that you can do so much. So ask yourself, what would stop you from eating a whole food, plant-based diet? That is the best. That's going to be the real key here. If you were to eliminate all the meat and the animal products off your plate, do you think you'd cope? How about walking for 10 minutes after every meal and then setting aside 20 minutes of exercise well away from meals in another part of your day where you would include resistance training, whether that was doing weights or push-ups, sit-ups, you know, that bodybuilding stuff. Because muscles are really important for insulin resistance. Start every meal with either a serving of raw fruit or like three fruit or a big salad and include legumes at every meal. That's chickpeas, peas, beans, lentils, those kinds of things. Eat whole wheat bread instead of white, brown rice instead of white rice, and eliminate pasta at least for a while. And if you do reintroduce pasta, then only whole wheat pasta or whole grain pasta. Make supper a really light snack and consume more of your calories at breakfast time. There's just some starters for you. We have a lot of shows on diabetes, so look them up on our website. Someone else called, can the use of steroids for bodybuilding lead to alcoholism? Well, I'm not aware of any relationship between the use of steroids and the use of alcohol. Someone else called, I'm 77 and in good health, take no medications. Well, well done. About a year ago, I developed eczema or eczema. I can't stand the itchiness. It's unbearable. What do you suggest? Unfortunately, dry skin can be very much a part of aging and the skin gets much thinner. I'm sure you've noticed that as we age. So it's just a natural part of aging. But try adding 3 tablespoons of ground flaxseed to your daily diet. That will increase your omega-3 fat intake. That's good for skin. Just sprinkle it on your breakfast cereal or get it. You can mix it into fluids and drink it down, but pop it in your breakfast. That dry, itchy skin can be really difficult to treat. So I recommend that you see a dermatologist, make sure that the diagnosis is right, and see if they have a cream that will help you. Thanks for those questions. Remember, like us on Facebook for tips and videos. Now, let's head down to the store. Unlike its name suggests, buckwheat is neither a cereal nor a wheat. But it's so named because its seed closely resembles the seed of the beech tree, and it's been cultivated as a grain since time immemorial. Thus the name beech wheat or buckwheat. It's grown all over the world as a short season crop. It smothers out weeds very effectively, and its flowers contain nectar that bees use to make rich amber honey. Then, once the flowers have yielded these buckwheat groats, the plant stalks can be used for straw or tilled in to help the next year's soil. Buckwheat has more zinc, copper, and manganese than most other cereals and provides a very high level of protein. And its high soluble fiber content helps to slow glucose absorption from a meal, so it's great for diabetes and pre-diabetes.
and its moderate amount of resistant starch is also a plus for colon health. Buckwheat contains flavonoid compounds like rutin. They're helpful in preventing hypertension, inflammation, and cancer. I like to sprout buckwheat and then dehydrate it into a crunchy, nutty, low-fat snack that's just magic when it's combined with raisins. Or I soak it overnight with plenty of water, a little salt and vanilla, and cook it into some wonderful breakfast waffles. Bon appetit. We've been talking to Dr. Neil Nedley about his book, Lost Art of Thinking. Before the break, we've been talking about making things that seem bigger than they really are. If we do that to problems, they can become insurmountable in our minds. However, I asked him if it can apply to what we think about ourselves.
Absolutely, and that sets us up for problems as well. And that's when we're inflating our self, magnifying self. It's called pride, and or arrogance or egotism or those sorts of things. It can get to the point where the person is pretty narcissistic and doesn't recognize it. And so we have to teach them little clues to recognize that pride can be there.
Give us some of those clues.
Well, where you actually think you have excellences that you don't have, that can be a big clue. But actually being oversensitive, wanting control over others, flaunting your individual rights, those are all signs of pride. Actually trying to be noticed, craving attention, itching for compliments, needing to be important. Those are clues. Any of those things that you have, and particularly more than one, pride is there, and what is soon to follow is wounded pride. And you're going to actually, before anyone starts getting into feelings of worthlessness, they have first had an inflated sense of self. And so a lot of people don't recognize that, but we have to go back to the magnification that actually ended up causing another magnification where you feel that you're worthless when in reality you're not.
So it's very hard to find the middle of the road when you're looking at yourself.
That's
one
right.
side or the other. So in dealing with the sense of worthlessness or the low self-esteem, that's part of that process.
Exactly.
Or, yeah. Wow. That's how do you combat it?
Well, again, teaching the correct principles of thinking, but also teaching there are some positive psychology techniques that we can utilize to help this. And one is we can actually teach the character strength of humility and putting things in the proper perspective that's there. Also, teaching gratitude. That's one of the things that can help. A lot of times people think the ones that are arrogant think that the good that's come their way is totally due to them. And in reality, they might have had a small role to play in it, but there's a lot of things that were good that came their way that they virtually had nothing to do with. And so expressing gratitude, which requires some humility as well, can be a very important aspect of overcoming that distortion.
Well, I've never thought about it that way. Now, we have the saying, sticks and stones will break our bones, but names will never hurt us. Is that really true? Because there's a section in your book talking about labeling.
Yes, labeling, naming and misnaming, or mislabeling.
Yeah, we have a very human tendency to throw a name out when someone does something.
Yeah, and even name ourselves as well, that can be in a distorted way. And so, yeah, we need to watch out for particularly mislabeling. And so, yes, we have to actually have people look at the labels and to see how accurate they are. And often, as soon as they label, they just assume that label is completely true all the time. And that's not true either.
So there's a bit of overgeneralization.
There's some overgeneralization that can enter in. There is some overlap between these distortions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and do we, when it comes to the distortions, do we tend to have one or two? Do some people collect the whole 10?
Oh yes,
really?
Oh yeah, yeah. There are people that come with all 10, and wow. It takes a little longer, more sessions,
sure,
to help them. But
you're still saying the analysis and recognizing.
Yeah, for all of them, it requires them to analyze their thoughts, recognize distortions in the thoughts, then reconstruct their thinking. You know, the Bible says, you are actually transformed, is the term the Bible uses, by the renewing of your mind. That means you're transformed by thinking actually new and accurate thoughts. And so transformation can take place as a result of that, and then practice, practice, practice.
Mm. Now, the last distortion is counting the negative and discounting the positive. Talk to us about that.
Well, this is even a little more severe than the mental filter we had talked about an earlier time. Mental filter is when you're just looking at both sides of the equation. Discounting the positive, you actually are acknowledging the positive, but then totally discounting it. So you appear to be rational. You appear to have looked at the other side.
So you're in deeper trouble with the mental filter.
That's right, you're in deeper trouble. Because the mental filter individual, we can help them see, well, wait a minute, you're not seeing this, you're not, oh, okay, I understand now. But this individual says, oh, no, I've actually acknowledged all of that, but it doesn't count.
Give us an example of counting the negative but discounting the positive.
Well, there was one individual I saw in a consultation who told me that nobody cared anything about her. And fortunately, this was a follow-up consult from the day before. She was in a behavioral medicine unit. And I was actually asked to see her for nutritional reasons. So she had the psychiatrist ask me to see her because we do so much with nutrition and lifestyle. And so I wasn't really touching the distortion so much. But the next day when she told me nobody cares anything about her, I had to tell her, well, I care about her. I wouldn't be here. There's a lot of other things I could do. And furthermore, I heard the staff say some positive things about her. So I quoted the staff on that and said, they think something positive about you. And she said, those people don't count, Dr. Nedley. So that's the disqualifying the positive. They don't count because they're not part of the real world. Anyone who's part of the real world doesn't care anything about me. And then, fortunately, the evening before, I had noticed that there were other patients that were in her room, and they were kind of having a good time at the time that I walked in there. And I noticed that there were some family members that were there. And so I reminded her, I said, you know, the other patients. And, you know, you had the family members in here. And she says, those people don't count, Dr. Nedley, because they don't know the real me. Anyone who knows the real me recognizes I'm rotten to the core and can't think anything positive about me. And so at that point, I called the psychiatrist and told him what was happening and told him that I think she should stay for some cognitive behavioral therapy. He was planning on discharging her that afternoon is what she told me. And I thought, with those type of thoughts, we're not going to get anywhere very well in an outpatient setting. And so she needs to actually have some help thinking the thought. So that's how severe it can get. So when you acknowledge, you know, the positive, but then totally discount it, something wrong, and we got to go through some rethinking.
Or we end up writing ourselves off. We'll be back with more after a short break. Now the final part of Anxiety BC's Real Stories of CBT for Anxiety.
I feel 100% better. I would, and in fact have, recommended CBT to many of my friends who I know are suffering. It works, and it'll make you feel an awful lot better. And honestly, you have nothing to lose.
My life has changed a lot since I've had treatment. I've found that I have a much larger circle of friends. I find that my friendships are a lot closer, which I had sort of been wanting to have for a long time and been missing out, really. I find that work situations are a lot easier. I'm not judging myself as much when I talk to people, or I'm just sort of, if I do say something that I think's silly or whatever, then I don't beat myself up about it as much anymore.
All I can tell anybody that is contemplating CBT or has anxiety to the point where they realize that it's affecting decisions in their lives, I would say do it, because not only are you going to get on with your life, but your life is going to be so much more rewarding. Overcoming challenges or taking on new goals is wonderful.
Anxiety in my life was all-encompassing. It affected my mental health and my physical health and my emotional health. And the great thing about cognitive behavior therapy is that, yes, it includes cognition, so you can change your thinking, and it includes behavior, so I was able to stop some of my physical habits as well. But in addition to that, I think there's a spiritual and an emotional dimension in which you feel really fantastic for being able to help yourself. You are not reliant on therapist sessions for however many years. You're not relying on medication to see you through this and to go through these changes. You actually are responsible for the change in your life yourself, and that's really empowering, and it motivates you to keep going.
After suffering social isolation and being trapped by anxiety, it must be a strong motivator to keep going. One trigger for anxiety in young women is distorted thinking about their physical appearance. Here's Dr. Nedley to explain.
Yeah, body image disorder. This is where you see yourself differently than the way others see you. And of course, this can lead to, you know, severe anorexia even, and a significant loss of weight, where you look at yourself in the mirror and you're still seeing some fat there, and nobody else is really seeing it, although you are, and so you're starving yourself some more, or purging, or doing things of that nature. And it's a common problem in our society today. And then, of course, it can get the other way as well, where you see yourself as not really being overweight, you continue to pack on the pounds and just not, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror and you think you're just fine, and you're not. And so it can go either way in regards to the range of weight. So it is important to view ourselves more accurately. And part of what I have to tell individuals as well is that we have a tendency to be able to view others more accurately than we can even view ourselves.
Wow.
And so listen to what others are saying. And of course, you know, in today's society, it's very politically incorrect to tell a loved one that they're overweight.
Yes. Could have painful consequences, right?
That's right. But it's not politically incorrect to tell people that they're underweight for whatever reason. Yeah. I've noticed that the underweight people get spoken to a lot about it. And if people are saying that, there may actually be some truth about it, and you might need to get some help in that area.
Yes, because that can almost be more dangerous.
Yes.
The underweight.
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah. Now, you also talked about, earlier in this series, you talked about lifestyle can make a difference, the nutrition that we eat. Tell us, what are some of the good things that we can eat to help our brains function?
Well, we can help our brains function better by getting particularly plant-based protein. You're going to get more tryptophan into the brain, more tyrosine into the brain. If there's not arachidonic acid, which is an acid that actually causes more inflammation in the brain, arachidonic acid is present in meat, eggs. You'll also get more tryptophan and tyrosine into the brain. And so when those amino acids get in there, we can make more serotonin, which can help us feel calmer, and more dopamine. Which can motivate us appropriately, and more norepinephrine, which can help our energy and concentration levels.
Wow. So by reducing meat and eggs, mm-hmm. and increasing plant-based foods, mm-hmm. we can actually change our neurotransmitter.
We can change our brain chemistry, yeah, significantly, within a couple of weeks.
Because most people go to drug medications to do that, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah.
But you're
yeah.
saying try this first.
Oh, yeah. Diet actually works better than drugs without the adverse side effects of the medications. So, and it's been shown it'll lower your depression scores by 50% in a 2-week period of time by getting on the diet such as we described.
So that 2 weeks is actually quicker than probably many antidepressants, which
that's
take
right.
traditionally 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's quicker and it has no side effects. In fact, it has probably some side benefits.
Some positive side. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Side benefits.
There are so many errors possible in the way that we think, but they're remedial. Emotional reasoning is common. Try to avoid magnification and minimization. Catch yourself when you're doing it and instead tell yourself the truth. Try to avoid labeling, using the words awful, horrible, terrible. Just ban them from any use in your household. Counting the negatives and discounting the positives is another trap that can leave us feeling shortchanged. Instead, count the blessings in your life. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Be sure to join us for the last part in our 4-part series when we look at some practical things that can help brain function. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you then.